Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Here we go. Here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson.
I am Sam Delaney.
That was an excessive pause. Can you hear
me? It wasn't a pause. Listen, right.
Oh, was it a dramatic pause, was it?
No, you're always picking me up on there being a pause. So what I tried to do now is almost overlap. As you're saying the last letter of Dawson, I'm trying to say Delaney. If I ever listen back, there's a pause in there. I think it's a power play, and I think you are editing in a pause.
Perhaps I am, perhaps I'm not.
I think your latest power play.
It could happen because, you know, sometimes we record these podcasts from separate locations because we can't be in the same room at the same time. Mm. Usually I'm in Sunderland and you're in London.
Also, it's not just because of that. It's because we're both extremely busy men. And important, man.
Mm. Very successful media careers.
Yeah.
But today we are both in London because one of us has travelled 300 miles to be here and the other one can't make their way into the centre of their home city.
Basically 5 miles. No, less than that, really.
Yeah.
Sorry about
and
that.
And I'm currently sat here in a travel lodge in the centre of London recording my half of the podcast while you sit in, is it your daughter's bedroom again?
No, I've upgraded to my own bedroom. That's because my wife's away, right? She's in Hungary, which is one of the reasons why I couldn't make it anyway, because I've got to do, on top of my successful and thrusting media career responsibilities, my Top Flight Time Machines and responsibilities, I also suddenly have to play the role of a full-time parent, which is really annoying.
But you're allowed
in my own bedroom, a real upgrade. In fact, I picked my daughter up from school and I picked my son up, then my daughter up, and on the way back I said, listen, kids, right, when we get in, I've got to go and do my podcast straight away. And my daughter rolled her eyes and I said, what? And she said, it's fine. I said, I'm not going to use your room. I'm going to use my room. She went, it's fine. It's just that you shout swear words really loudly for a full hour every time. And I said, actually, it's rather more nuanced than that. Well, she went, look, I don't know. I don't hear the whole thing. But all I can hear is loud swearing for an hour coming out of your room.
For an hour.
And I thought, fucking hell. What kind of endorsement is that of a podcast that I think is actually one of the final great bastions of journalism?
Yeah.
And also has a certain artistic poetry to it, fused with that journalism. Yeah. But to her, it's just an hour of loud swearing, and I resent that.
Well, that's what we're going to call this episode, an hour of loud swearing. So welcome to it in the next 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, don't worry, everyone. It won't actually be an hour. That's just her. She's 11. She's got no concept of time.
Shall we look at the prediction league at the beginning?
Let's do it.
I think.
Yeah.
Because after the last episode, Wolves beat Liverpool in the FA Cup. Seems like a long time ago. Mm. It might have been. I've got no idea. And you got a point for that, Sam, as did Results Bot.
Mm.
So you're now level pegging on 62 apiece, and I'm on 60. We've got 5 matches from the Premier League we can go at.
Top of the league. I am top of the league.
Yeah, don't get cocky, though, because that's going to be your downfall. As in so many occasions in your life so far. Get into a position of power and status and then lording it over everyone has led to the subsequent downfall.
It takes me... No, to be fair, it often takes me up to 24 hours after gaining some sort of success, power or influence for it to go to my head. Often for the first 24 hours, I'm quite calm and measured.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, so I wouldn't say I immediately let it go to my head. There's sometimes an interim period.
Right. Well,
before I start making demands, making grandiose claims, bullying people... Using my power in a corrupt way. That's how, I've got to be honest, all of those feelings are bubbling up inside me again now.
It will happen at some point, but yeah. Perhaps not today. Perhaps it is for the best that we're not in the same room then. Mm. Let's have a look at five Premier League matches coming up this weekend.
Right.
We've got West Ham versus Arsenal.
Oh. Yeah, I'm going to this game. I know, you go first on this.
It's a Saturday lunchtime kickoff, this one, I think, isn't it?
Second 12:30 in a row. I had to go to West Ham Birmingham last week, 12:30. On a Saturday, I like a little mooch about. I don't know about you, but yeah, I like to wake up a bit late and then just shuffle around the house for a few hours, tinkering. Do you know what I mean? Just shuffling.
Just with your slippers on.
Dicking about in your slippers.
Yeah.
You know, watching just things.
Having a look around the garden, see if anything's new.
Cups of tea, staring out the window at the squirrels and birds, which I get a lot of.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. 12:30, you're up, you're out. You've got to get down there.
It's obviously a sign of your team's popularity that you've been selected for TV coverage. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? I'll go first on this one. Yeah. Like you said, West Ham versus Arsenal. I'm predicting this is going to be a 2-0 win for Arsenal, unfortunately, Sam. Mm. I think Treeman doesn't have what it takes to overcome the mighty Arsenal.
I think the Treeman isn't the problem. I think that he has taken the team forward leaps and bounds, this West Ham team.
Yeah.
And he is clearly a brilliant coach. For instance, he's taken players who we thought, what we didn't think much of as fans, and he's almost, you know, he's coached them into better players in a short period of time.
Right.
But he can only do so much. So with the squad we've got, I think, you know, the best he can do is get us to, you know, between 7th and 10th this season at best.
Where are you right now in the league?
10th, I think.
Oh, that's not bad then, is it?
Yeah,
it speaks volumes about the rest of the Premier League, but, you know.
Andy, we are a good team now. We're good. We're not great. We're not very good. Okay. But for the first time in a long time, we have become authentically good. We are on a par, I would say, with Watford and Wolves and Leicester.
I would say your average then. If you're 10th in the league and you're on par with Watford and Wolves, I'd say your average.
All right.
But, well,
it's all about context. To me, average is great. It's exciting.
Average will suffice.
Average will very much suffice for us at the moment. I'm going to go. Listen, I'm just going to go 1-0 West Ham.
No,
I've got to say it. You never know with West Ham. I mean, Arnautovic unfortunately is wants to go to China for loads of money, which is a bit insane.
Is that his wishes, or is that just something that's come out of the blue from China?
Well, just before we went on air, I received a WhatsApp on my West Ham group. And it was a link to a story in the Metro saying that he had delivered a transfer rocket to West Ham.
Oof.
Now, I haven't had time to read the details because I had to Skype you at your travel lodge. But it appears to me that the story yesterday emerged that the Chinese wanted him they wanted to make a bid. And everyone thought, that's a load of bollocks. He's not going to do that. And it's probably just his agent, who is his brother, making a bit of noise to secure him a pay rise, a new contract. Fine. Apparently, he's now delivered a rocket.
So he's tied a transfer request to a rocket firework. And then
a scud rocket and fired it at Sullivan's house.
I've got to admit, when I saw him go off after 20 minutes in the cup match last weekend, after supposedly complaining of a bad back and then having a little fight with Treeman when he came off, I thought, aye, transfer window's open.
Right, he's gone, he's pointed, I saw it, I was there. He's gone over to Samir Nasri, who was making his debut, who's quite the character himself, let's not forget. And by the way, on previous episodes, we had indicated, based on no knowledge or substance whatsoever, as is our way, that his drug ban was for iron filings or similar. Transpires, it's got nothing to do with any sort of recreational drug, iron filings or otherwise. It was some sort of perfectly legitimate supplement that he had to take. And it just had a degree too much of one banned substance, so it was quite innocent. Anyway, he was playing, and they must be in cahoots with each other because he had a little chat with Arnautovic, and then he went over to the bench and started waving to them and pointing at Arnautovic, and he effectively went over and instructed the bench to substitute Arnautovic. I've never seen anything like it before. The closest I've seen to it is going back to 1990 when Lineker did that. Hey. Keep an eye on him. about Gazza. It was that sort of thing. Someone communicating with the bench, like getting your mate to go and tell a girl you fancy her. It was like that. And then they said, all right, come off then. Because Nasri was pointing at his own back and then pointing at an outfit. I was like, wind your neck in, mate. This is your fucking debut. You've only been here 5 minutes. You're suddenly trying to be the manager. Right? And the physio and our midfielder all rolled into one. So then he's gone off and he's immediately complained. But I don't know if you saw Tree Man's response was fantastic. Tree Man answered him and then he shouted and then Tree Man just laughed. It was serious. That is the sort of power playing that you only get with age and experience. He's been dealing with egos. I mean, the man managed Real Madrid and Man City. He's dealt with bigger egos than Arnautovic. But he, he's 114 years old, the Tree Man.
Yeah, he's seen it all, hasn't he?
He's seen it all. He's seen it all come and go. He was managing teams back in the 1930s.
He's dealt with the egos of like Stanley Matthews and people like that. This is nothing.
Di Stefano, the lot.
Yeah. Puskas.
Yeah, he's managed them all. And he just started laughing, which I thought, well, that is a fucking superb power play. He was just complete relaxed, shrugged and laughed. Then looked over at his mates and laughed again.
Do you think Nasri has come with a message from China then, deliberately signed for West Ham with a message from China, and he's delivered the message to Arnautovic on the pitch?
Like the Manchurian candidate, you know what the Chinese are like. I know I bring up the Manchurian candidate a lot, but it's a film that had a big impact on my worldview.
Hey, why not?
And I think that, you know, I suspect, having seen that film many years ago, I suspect that the Chinese do have the capability to hypnotise people and make them do their bidding. And I think that's what they've done somehow to Nasri. And Nasri in turn has done it to Arnautovic. That appears to be the case.
They've used Nasri as a conduit of some
exactly.
kind. Well, would you like me to read out a tweet that West Ham United tweeted 1 minute after this recording began?
Yes.
In response to the statement from the brother and agent of Marco Arnautovic this afternoon, the club has issued the following, and they've attached a graphic of the statement on it. And it just says, Marco Arnautovic has a contract and we fully expect him to honour it. He is not for sale. And it begins and ends there. That's it.
Fuck off, Bobby Arnautovic, if that's his brother's name.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Fuck
Keep
off,
your fucking
Bobby.
Nose out, sunshine.
Yeah, fucking hell. This is happening all over again. This is what happened with fucking, what's his name? Payet.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, Arnautovic is, what, 29 now? So would you not, you know, take 50 million for him at this stage?
There's a little chat going on WhatsApp, like, with people going, oh, he's worth much more than 35 million. And they're going, all right. How much would you accept for him? One bloke's gone, 70 million, not a penny less. I've gone, well, for a start, I just look at it and think, come on, lads, you're all adults. I'm assuming you're all adults. Why are you wasting time with this mad... It's Thursday, you're all at work. Why are you wasting time with this mad speculation? So, because I'm a dick, I wrote £1 trillion and I want one of the Chinese government to come and wank each and every one of us off. And do you know what someone's... Do you know what someone's response was?
Go on.
Seriously, you wouldn't take 70 million? What? What? Can you not see I'm not taking this seriously? I'm being a cunt.
Right, so you reckon 1-0 against Arsenal. Obviously, I know which will score the winner.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Burnley versus Fulham.
What a dreary game. Burnley, Fulham. 2-0 Burnley.
2-0 to Burnley. I'm going to go 3-0 to Burnley because I think they're just revitalised now that they've been Joe Hart off. They seem to be a winning machine now, so I'll go 3-0 for that one. Results, but of course, as always, we'll say 1-0. Right, on to the next one. Brighton and Hove Albion versus Liverpool.
Oh, well, this is a tough one for Liverpool because Brighton have a great home record, but same time, I think they're going to win it. 3-0, actually. A 3-0 away 3-0. Win.
I'm going to go 2-0 again for that one. Results, but of course, says Brighton will win that. 1-0. On to, I think this is Saturday tea time, Chelsea versus Newcastle.
2-0 Chelsea.
2-0 to Chelsea, you reckon? I think 3-0 to Chelsea, that one. I think Newcastle will get a right proper
I think Newcastle will just turn up and not bother to make an effort. They'll just not bother.
Yeah, they'll try and just stay behind the ball.
Yeah.
And they'll let one in after about 18 minutes, and then after that, it'll just be finished.
Yeah.
And then Spurs versus Manchester United, the last one, which I think is Sunday afternoon. That could be quite
always
a sexy
a great
match.
Game. Always a great game.
I'm going to go 2-2 with that one.
Yeah, I can see it being a high draw. All right, I'm going to go 3-3. Fuck it.
3-3. Whoa.
Fuck it.
Now it's the excitement's beginning to bubble to the surface.
Yeah, it is.
Here, I see with that prediction. Be very surprised if that happens. All right, that's the prediction league out of the way. We might as well have a little break at this point.
Jalapeño. Jalapeño.
Right, we're back. And did you watch Manchester City beating Burton Albion 9-0 last night?
I tuned in when it was 5-0.
Do you have any opinions on this?
I thought, I thought 5-0. Don't know about whether I want to be bothered watching this.
It was the most boring match
I've
ever seen.
It was really boring. But the thing is, it was like, when that seventh went in, it cut to Nigel Clough, who was slumped in his chair. I mean, he was making no effort to keep the spirits up of the team. And do you know what I think I saw him say? He sort of covered his face with his hand and went, "Oh no!" I'm thinking, "Fucking hell, mate!" With that sort of attitude, no wonder your players lack any pluck. And it really was. I can't stress this enough. I know we're supposed to talk about the romance of the cup and Burton Albion and Nigel Clough and all of these other sort of things, and it's like rich versus poor and David versus Goliath and. But the truth is, that was a scoreline based on the fact that Burton were so shit, not that Man City were so good. Burton Albion were shit. There's no two ways around it. It is not about Man City being magnificent.
You don't think it was a bit of both?
West Ham or Sunderland would have won that 9-0. They were like knackered, these players. They couldn't chase after the ball. Every time they got it, they gave it back to Man City. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, because all their players are like really feeble and
you're
probably not very clever.
You're expected to at least be fit enough and tough enough, and if anything at that level, they often seem to indicate, although I don't think it's true, that the players are tougher and will run harder than the pampered Premier League All-Stars. Well, that wasn't the case with Burton Albion.
Burton Albion were
acting like a complacent Premier League team who thought they could stroll about. So I have no sympathy for them or Nigel Clough, I'm afraid.
Well, I heard that Nigel Clough went in at half-time and he said some of the players were, first of all, some of them were just dumbstruck and unable to speak, but he said that some of them as well had said that the Man City players weren't even, it didn't look like they were running around,
no,
it looked like
it
they were gliding across the pitch.
It didn't. I mean, they were just every time, it was like, do you ever play FIFA? It was like, I got FIFA 19 the other day, and when you first play against the computer, do a quick kickoff game, then it's got your settings, if you forget to change them, on to beginner. And so you play, and suddenly it's boring because at half time you're 5-0 up. I'm not a brilliant player, but beginner is like ridiculous because every time you get the possession of the ball, you immediately just create a goal scoring chance.
Yeah.
And it's tedious. And that's what it looked like for City. It looked like they'd been accidentally put on beginner level where they should be on world class.
I mean, there's people saying that City were basically bullying Burton and they shouldn't have put such a strong team out for that match. But then. You look at it, and Man City under-21s played the night before in the mighty Checkatrade Trophy.
Right.
So he couldn't really have selected anybody other than the hot shots.
Plus, listen, it's the semi-final. So what are you supposed to do? It's an insult to the Caribou Cup if you put out fucking, you know, a load of youngsters. I think, fuck it, I'm a City fan. If I was a City fan, I'd be like, I want to get to the final. I want my day out at Wembley.
Yeah.
So I don't give a shit that we're playing Burton. Don't give them a fucking favour. Duff them up. Get us to Wembley. Good. And they're all shouting, we want 10. But someone said, I don't know if you've seen this, I think it's going around on Twitter. Someone sent me a image of a betting slip. And it was, they'd had a bet on it being 10-0 to City and De Bruyne scoring. And De Bruyne, of course, did score after 5 minutes. He scored the first goal.
Oh,
and they
fucking
were
hell.
So they were on 85 minutes. It was 9-0 and all of the City fans were singing, "We want 10." And I was like, they're definitely going to get a 10th. And somehow they just went shit, and the geezer must have been crying on his knees in front of the TV set because he stood to win thousands.
I was going to say it was 100-1, I think, for 10-0.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it would have been with a double.
Yeah, I can't remember. I've got it somewhere, but I might even get it out while you're talking.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, fuck it. All right,
sticking with football before we move on to bullshit and other matters. Did you see the picture of Crystal Palace goalkeeper Wayne Hennessy?
Yeah, doing the old Nazi salute, yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw his excuse as well.
Did you see his excuse? I'm going to read it out because it's so good.
Right.
I waved and shouted at the person taking the picture to get on with it and at the same time put my hand over my mouth to make the sound carry. It's been brought to my attention that frozen in a moment by the camera, very evocative speech there, this looks like I am making a completely inappropriate type of salute. I can assure everyone I would never do that, and any resemblance to that kind of gesture is absolutely coincidental. Love and peace, Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne, whatever. There are various elements of this story that remind me immediately, and I'm sure you do, of one particular 1980s Saturday night sitcom. Hello, hello. Because two things. One is, in Hello, Hello, people were constantly doing Seek Hiles, which, when you reflect on it now, is quite strange, because although it was in the context of a comedy, it was Saturday night tea time entertainment where one of the main jokes was people continuously doing Seek Hiles, right? So that's the first thing it reminded me of. The second thing it reminded me of, which is probably my favourite element of Hello, Hello, which is saying something because I had lots of favourite elements, but my favourite element of Hello, Hello, my favourite sort of, you know, running joke was where I call him Hello, Hello, Rene. That thing when you're a kid and you call the main character in any film or programme the title of the film.
Yeah.
So I thought Luke Skywalker was called Luke Star Wars. And so, Jesus. Anyway, like, you know, you think Marty McFly's actual name is John Back to the Future. Anyway, I digress, which is uncharacteristic of me. My favourite thing is when Rene was caught always getting off with one of the sexy waitresses, and his battle axe wife, whose name I can't remember, but you'll remember,
Enid
walks in on him, catches him the whole time, and he just always says, she went, "What are you doing, Rene?" And he went, "You stupid woman, can you not see that I was trying to remove a particle of dust from this poor young lady's eye, and at the same time my trousers accidentally were unbuttoned by a passing swallow?" Like, the most elaborate and unconvincing excuse. And Edith, what was her name?
Edith. Yeah.
Constantly fell for it, and I think all of this points to one thing. As soon as I read this, before I felt outrage, disgust, or amusement, the first thing I thought was Wayne Hennessy is a massive Hello, Hello fan.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a homage, if anything, isn't it?
And fair enough, because we all miss Hello, Hello, don't we?
Yeah, of course, unless you watch it repeatedly on UK Gold during the afternoons, which I definitely don't. Well, sometimes. That reminds me as well, a little digression as well. When you said John Back to the Future, it reminded me of when my kids were younger, and whenever they would ask me who'd invented such and such, I would always say Sir John, whatever the name of the thing was, and tell them it was in 1862. So it was like, Dad, who invented the kettle? Oh, well, that was Sir John Kettle in 1862.
That's great.
Who invented the microphone? Ah, that was Sir John Microphone back in 1862. And it fell for it for a few years.
That we always do that about action films, because it came to our attention, my wife and I, that every action film for like between a period in the early 80s and mid 90s, the main character was always called John. So now...
John Rambo.
Whatever the name of the film is in an action film, we always refer to the main character as John, whatever that is. So there is obviously John Taken is who Liam Neeson plays in the Taken franchise.
Right.
Mel Gibson is John Lethal Weapon. Right. And then John Wick, when that came out, which, by the way, is one of the greatest of recent years, we call him John Wick.
John Wick. Is Tom Cruise John Impossible?
Yeah. That is an awesome name, by the way. Johnny like Impossible.
Johnny Impossible.
Mate,
fucking
we should do you fancy one time, once we've done the haunted house and whatever the other things, we up the storage live broadcast.
We're promising to do, would you, we never will.
Would you like to do a full Hello, Hello Marathon, in which we watch every episode of Hello, Hello in chronological order from beginning to end in one sitting. Piss breaks allowed.
Do we podcast it as well, or just for our own amusement?
No, we deep dive it, but sort of live.
Right, okay. On YouTube. We're live
No,
YouTube
we can
broadcast.
Record it and put it out, but what we record our thoughts as we're going along. We could even do it remotely. So, you could be in Sunderland. As long as we go 1, 2, 3, play, and both press play at the same time, then we can deep dive it, because it went on for years and years and years, and there's a lot in there, a lot of content. And in my mind, and I've watched, obviously, The World at War, the great that was narrated by Laurence Olivier and is regarded as one of the greatest televisual achievements of all time. Various other documentary series about the wars, films about Churchill, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
To me, the best rendition of what happened in that terrible, terrible war in which so many millions died is certainly Hello, Hello.
It's the most accurate, isn't
it? I do,
yeah. And the sexiest.
Accuracy.
Yeah.
Sexiness.
Yeah.
And authenticity, which are the three things that I look for in all of the TV shows I like.
I can't think of any other World War II related piece of media that I've encountered that's made me want to have a quick wank.
Have you seen that terrible film? What's it fucking called? Is it Dunkirk? Is that what it's called?
I think it is, but I haven't seen it.
You know the one I'm talking about? Came out
Dunkirk.
Came out last year or something.
Yeah.
That is shit. It's really boring. Loads of it's just Tom Hardy flying around in a plane in complete silence.
Okay.
Then there's...
Maybe this could be a regular feature on the podcast where you give capsule reviews of films that have been out for over a year.
The reason I'm bringing it up is relevant is that compare it like for like with Hello, Hello. And you will learn much more about what went down in the war from watching Hello, Hello than you will from watching Tom Hardy flying around in silence in a plane.
And you're much more likely to have a wank as well.
Precisely.
Talking points!
Shall we have some bullshit before we wrap this up?
Yeah.
Catboy92 says, we had an 80s school bullshitter called John. My friends and I like playing snooker on full-size tables. So to ingratiate himself into our circle, John told us not only did he have a snooker table at home, but it was also 24 feet long, twice the size of a regulation table. I mean, we've all played on a 12-foot table and it's massive compared to the 6-footers we have at home. But can you imagine a fucking 24-foot snooker table?
Jesus Christ. I mean...
You just can't, can you?
Listen, on a normal snooker table, I'm 6'2", right? And when I have ever played on a full-size snooker table, I feel about 3 foot tall. Like, I feel like fucking Tom Thumb. I've got no idea. I've got no idea how mid-sized people like fucking Alex Higgins or Terry Griffiths manage to clamber their way around a fucking snooker table. It makes no sense to me.
It's really hard to even see one end of the table from the other, isn't it?
It's just
like a football match in the fog.
When I stand at a snooker table, it feels like the biggest thing I've ever stood in front of.
Yeah.
You know, and I stood at the foot of the World Trade Center before it got fucking blown up. Not just before, I mean years before. And I remember thinking, well, let's not get back into the fact that I predicted 9/11, but anyway, you know, snooker tables are fucking big, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And if you made one double the size of standard, then forget about it. You'd need 3 men on every side. A game of snooker would require 3 men holding each cue. You'd have to form teams rather than it being an individual sport.
I'm thinking that perhaps the reason why the World Trade Center had 2 towers was because they built one, looked at it, and thought, fuck me, it's nothing compared to a snooker table. We're going to need another one.
Well, that's very American, isn't it? Think big.
Yeah.
That's their national motto. Think big. They built one massive tower, and then they're gone, geez, that's one hell of a big motherfucking tower. Hey, why not build another one right motherfucking next to it?
That's going to show it to those fucking snooker assholes.
Yeah.
When they come over here and compare.
Those fucking commies. That fucking Terry Griffiths and Ray Reardon. The fucking freaks. fucking commie freaks.
I've got another good idea from Shruggable on Twitter. I'm going to read the second part first because it kind of sets it up for the first part. It says, a security guard he used to work with was a bullshit machine. He says he was one of those people who claimed to be a black belt in several martial arts, and if anybody tried to start a fight, he had to inform them at least 3 times of his qualification. If they continued, he was legally allowed to kill them, but only using his martial arts training. That's a bullshit standard,
that
isn't it?
That is a great one, yeah. I mean, it's almost...
That must have been uttered so many times.
Would you say that having dangerous kung fu skills that have to be regulated is almost the number one bullshit theme?
It's got to be top of the pops, hasn't it?
Amongst UK men?
I've seen I've got a license to kill like James Bond has, something like that. So this is the second part of it. The security guard who was a bullshit machine, also when it came to his prowess with women. Shruggable says he once told us that he'd fingered a woman so well that the volume of her orgasm made her cat die from shock.
He killed a cat.
Yeah.
Through fingering. Amazing.
He killed the cat by proxy through the volume of her orgasm.
Fucking great.
From fingering a woman.
Yeah. That's, I wonder if she, once she recovered from the sexual ecstasy he'd transported the two, whether she felt upset about the cat's death or she thought, well, it was a price worth paying.
I think it'd have softened the blow, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, it would be a fucking...
It took her a while to come down.
You come down to earth. Talk about coming down to earth with a bump. That was the greatest orgasm of my life. Right.
Have you got any bullshits there you want to read out?
I've got a sexual fails from Philip Hawkins, which I alluded to on the last podcast. He said, new girlfriend who was 20 when I was 17, New Year's Eve, went to a mate's hotel and was offered a bedroom for the two of us for the night. And I said, no, it's okay. I'm staying on her parents' sofa. Her dad was a vicar. The next week, she called me and said her parents weren't at home, so would I like to come over for the night? I said I'll have to ask my mum. She called back 10 minutes later and said she now had to go to her mates. I didn't hear from her ever again. Jesus.
Oh, Philip, you twat. Mm. Fucking hell. Tell you what, let's end with some news without news.
Okay.
Got some nice ones for you today. First of all, I haven't turned my house into a Japanese restaurant, Norwich man claims.
10.
10. This is a fantastic one. I'm going to elaborate a bit on it. I know we don't normally do that, but I'm going to elaborate. It's a fella who used to run a Japanese restaurant, and now his 7-bedroom house in Norwich has got a sign above it called Orlando's, but he's claiming it's not a restaurant.
Right.
But there's been complaints from people. It's also got the word Sakura above, which is the same name as his previous restaurant. It's got a sign. It's got like an arch over his front door.
Right.
And he's saying it's not a restaurant.
Mate, it's a fucking restaurant.
One of the neighbours said that she was invited to the launch party last year.
Yeah, all right, so I did. All right, admittedly, yeah, I had a launch party, but it's not a restaurant.
That doesn't mean anything.
I didn't say we were launching a restaurant. I just said it was a launch. It was a launch of my home. I'm launching my home. I was launching a new chapter in my life.
Yeah, of a sign, having a big sign above his front door that says Orlando's. So, yeah, that's that one. Second one. Burglar alarm left beeping for 3 weeks sparks Axeman's beauty parlour rampage.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to give it an 8 because I don't like Axeman beauty parlour rampages as a rule. It would upset me. But obviously I'll give it an 8 because I'm intrigued all the same.
Are you just against all rampages or just
No, not all rampages, but Axeman rampages, no, don't like them, not a fan. No.
Not a fan. All right, finally, council bans cheese toasties to stop motorbike gangs.
10. Need to know more about that.
Fantastic. There we go then.
Everyone's obsessed with motorbike gangs now, aren't they? Like,
what is councils?
Everyone. Councils, individuals, everyone. It's like the main thing that people... It's above Brexit in terms of topics discussed.
Motorbike gangs.
And it's like mad, because it's like Mad Max has come true. It's like we now live in a dystopian future, like the ones portrayed in the early Tim Burton Batman movies, where, like, literally streets are patrolled by mad gangs on motorcycles. Like, that's what Mad Max said. It's what the first Batman movie said. It's what Weird Science said. Sort of mutants on motorbikes riding around and killing people or stealing from people or both. And it's a real problem. I own a two-wheeled vehicle. I own a Vespa. And when I
went... So a motorbike, was it?
Eh? It's not a motorbike, no.
It's not a motorbike.
But a lot of them are using that. I think it's because they're easier to nick, basically, right? They're easier to nick and they're easier to ride if you're just some kid with your eye on the main chance. And the guy who I buy my scooters from, right, the guy who's the scooter man.
He's more than one scooter.
I've had loads of scooters over the years. I don't own a lot at one time, but I renew my scooter every couple of years, you know.
That's the one I thought you meant.
I'm a fan of the Vespas. I've always had them for years. And I go, so the bloke who's my bloke who gets them for me, he's this big, really muscular South African bloke, right? And I've always wondered about his past. I thought, what's he doing there selling fucking Vespas? He's obviously from South Africa. And he's extremely muscular and scary looking. Yeah. It doesn't seem to fit. Something's
hiding
missing.
From something.
Well, last year he opened up to me and told me, I don't want to go into full detail. I could end up in another Louis Collins situation.
Yeah, we want that, do we?
But he told me about his past in South Africa and some of the things that he'd done and why he had to flee and come here for a more peaceful life because he was a very... I think he's a very liberal, open-minded man who wasn't comfortable with the climate in South Africa when he was a kid. He's white, by the way. And anyway, so I'm thinking, God, what an amazing story. This bloke, he's a good man, he's a tough man, but he didn't want any part of apartheid, and he came here to sell Vespas to nice gentlemen like me instead.
Yeah.
And then he went, you've got to watch out for it here, though. And I said, what? He goes, these fucking scooter gangs, they're not playing around. And I said, no, I suppose not. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not really bothered about the fuckers. You shouldn't be. Size of you mad cunt. I mean, he looks like some... And he goes, they're not coming near me. I've got a fucking axe down my trousers. And I went, what? And he fucking showed me that he'd created a compartment in his motorcycle car and had a hand axe all sharpened. I said, what the fuck is that? He went, mate, we're not playing games here. It's your life you're talking about. I ride on a scooter that's a very popular target for the scooter gangs. He went, I was riding home the other night and I could see them tracking me. I put one hand straight down my leg and grabbed the axe. And I said, what the fuck are you talking about? What, you were going to fucking axe them? He went, we're not playing games here, Sam. And I said, so what happened in the end? He goes, they backed off. And I was like, fucking, well, thank God for that. Because if not, I wouldn't be buying a scooter from you now. You would be in prison for having axed a couple of blokes' heads off.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have any sort of scooter dealer.
I'd have to go and get a scooter off some other bastard.
But coming up in cinemas in the summer of 2019, though, John Vespa!
I'm going to patrol the streets on my 125-litre Vespa. And I'm going, or I say, you know, like 125cc. I'm going to patrol the streets and bring justice to these ugly, divided, and violent streets of ours on my Vespa.
That's what Britain needs.
And using only not my fists and not a hand axe, using my words, Andy.
Yeah, well, fucking good luck with that, Sam. Okay. Right, that's all we've got time for. We'll be back on Monday, I imagine.
Yeah.
If we don't knock another one out before then. Thanks for listening. We are on Twitter at TF Time Machine. We are also on Facebook for reasons that neither of us really understand. And thanks for listening, as always. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.